Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Shay Dixon. And Shay, it is Wednesday afternoon. Brian Kelly has already talked to the media. Instead of doing our Monday mailbag, we're doing it on Wednesday. We post on the board, as always, asking for questions. We had a ton of questions. So we'll try to keep to, I guess, like 30 or so. I don't know how many we have here, but some of them are repetitive, so we'll get to them. But how are you doing today?
30 questions or 30 minutes?
30 questions. We have 50 replies per page, and we were on over one page, but then I deleted some. And so there's a lot of questions here. So I don't know how we're going to do it, but it'll be fun.
It's not that many. I think you're miscounting. We've got this.
But, oh, okay. All right. You know,
it's I think it's 20 replies per page.
No, it's not 20 replies per page. You don't even know how many replies are on your own board.
I'm gonna count these afterwards. I don't have the time to do this publicly right now. I'm gonna figure this out.
All right.
Okay. So this is our first in season mailbag. Obviously, yes. We got it rolling last week, back by popular demand. If you ever do have questions, submit them. It always starts the day before. You can see it on the Tiger board. Still $1 for a month if you want to sign up. We suggest you do. But as Maddie B says, if you're watching on YouTube or Spotify, wherever you're listening, hit that subscribe. Give us a like if you're on YouTube. And let's get this thing rolling. Maddie B, 45-24, FSU wins. LSU falls to 0-1 for the fourth year in a row. Everybody watch the game. If you're listening to the mailbag, you certainly at least know the outcome. So we'll skip past all that and get into the meat of it.
Yeah,
Hunter Vernett, off top, no surprise there. Hunter's active, yes, always in the responses. Shout out Hunter, I like this. He's starting us off light. This is just going to kind of grease the wheels a little bit, Matty B. If you're a college head coach and you heard your offensive lineman telling the opposing team's defensive lineman how good they were, would you A, chew them out, B, bench them and chew them out, or C, all of the above and pull their scholarship? This is obviously in reference to what an FSU player referred to as number 70 for LSU, which would be your right guard, Miles Frazier, and said that mid-game, Miles Frazier said, man, y'all are good up front, you know, on the D-line. And then he responded, the FSU D-lineman said that after that, they knew it was over with. Matty B, this was the same, I guess this comes afterwards. This was an interview at practice this week. I will add this, that during the broadcast, they made a comment that Jared Verse had come to the sideline off after the 4th-and-1 play at the goal line and said their right side of the offensive line isn't going to be able to block. So I know Hunter's in jest there a bit, and we'll give him his answer, but I know we'll talk about that other stuff here in a bit. I would, I'm going to not chew him out. I'm going to just bench him for this week. I'm in a spot to do that with Grambling on the schedule and it already being a question mark. He didn't specify which player, so that would really depend.
Well, we had already – yeah, right. Maybe he missaw it. Maybe he saw 50 or something. But no, the thing is, with Miles Frazier, and like you said, this is a good question to start off with because it's like LSU fans were already like, you know – we're uncertain about the competitiveness, the grit in that game. And then Brian Kelly comes out and says the competitive edge thing 10 times. And then you get a Florida State player coming in and saying that they were complimenting us as we were beating them up. It's like just stacking on top of one another of things that perceptually did not look good for LSU on top of losing the game by 21. Like things just didn't look good and feel good. And as part of the reason why, like I was, you know, picked Florida State to win was just the vibes with LSU just were not good coming into this game, and they're not good leaving this game, and now everyone's panicking, and we'll get into the panic in a bit. But like, yeah, Frazier already was the one they were pulling out when they put Zalen Hurd in the starting lineup in the scrimmage a couple weeks before the season. Like you said, I mean, I'm starting Zalen Hurd this week at right tackle if it's me.
Yes, my answer there came more so due to play, not so much the comment. But yes, you make a good point that after we hear Brian Kelly talk 25 times about no competitive edge, and then that kind of stuff comes out, it kind of just validates exactly what people thought when we watched the game of, man, where is the fire, the juice? Brian Kelly even said, Matty B, that he acknowledged something in kind of a roundabout way that I thought you could look at after the game. Florida State bullied LSU. Well, in the first half and really the first quarter, as we looked at the game, we said, man, FSU is shooting themselves in the foot. They keep getting these penalties. These weren't procedural penalties. These weren't anything like that. It was throwing Aaron Anderson into the bench. It was, you know, different.
I think
there was one more,
yeah,
like personal foul penalty. I think it was three total. And you don't want those, but boy, did it not set the tone early that, as Brian Kelly said, great, we only had no penalties in the first half and two all game. Maybe we needed another penalty or two because we showed no, we were too controlled that we showed no actual juice. I found that interesting. I did want to give share this Patrick Queen tweet, which I loved. Patrick Queen, former LSU linebacker, obviously now in the NFL. He weighed in on the issue, and I thought he had a great comment because obviously if LSU is getting beat badly by Florida State in this game, and this comment is supposedly made from an offensive lineman to the other team, Patrick Queen said, that's crazy. We played Smitty, Ruggs, Judy, and Waddle at one time, and we're telling them they were trash the whole game. In that game, he's referencing 2019, Tua threw for more than 400 yards. So as Patrick Queen says, and that 2019 team had the 2019 squad had some juice. Even when you're just getting run up and down the field, they were still telling them how trash they were, and they were four future NFL draft picks.
Yeah, and that game was obviously a shootout in which is like nobody was stopping them. So at least they had Burrow and you know, those dudes on the other side having their back. And that kind of – Brian Kelly talked about that too, is, you know, complimentary football, all that stuff. Anyways, we can move on now to the next of
It's a good way. Thank you, Hunter, for that start. And let's just get loose a little bit before we roll. Hokumojo, what are your updated predictions record-wise for this team? I like it because it gives me an opportunity to say – I don't want to judge a season off of week one, not even just one game, week one. And because of that, I said 11-1 with a loss to Bama. Well, I didn't factor in a loss to Florida State. So naturally, I now need to shift down to 10-2 if I'm going to stick with my original predictions. I think that one thing that would be that will needs to be on the forefront of fans' minds is that, yes, this team won the West a year ago, and they win six SEC games to do it. Beating Bama was awesome. That's what everyone remembers. Great. The other five games were against five SEC teams that didn't finish with winning records in the conference, and they were at a dogfight in all of them. They were losing Mississippi State game in the fourth quarter. Even the comfortable ones, like an Ole Miss, that game was very tight through the first half, and they were kind of a second-half team a lot of the time. Arkansas, they play a backup, Malik Hornsby, who transferred out and got beat out by TJ Finley at Texas State. Ultimately,
Texas State.
They don't get to see KJ Jefferson. They were up 6-3 at half. They won 13-10. Like, I think there was an expectation this offseason, Matty B, that, yeah, you were in those tight games, but now you're returning these guys. Now you've got these transfers and you're going to be significantly better. So those games don't become as competitive. And now I start to wonder if that's true or not. I'm going to stick right now at 10-2. I could see 9-3, but I'm really curious as to, is this team better than the team a year ago?
Ooh, that's an interesting. That's a loaded question. For me, I predicted them to lose to Florida State and win 11 straight games. So technically, you know, I could check that box. I mean, I'm on schedule right now. Now, do I think they're going to win 11 straight games at this moment? No. So I am with you as far as 10-2, potentially 9-3 goes. And if they did go 9-3 with the bowl win, they would end the year 10-3. And to me, that would be a successful season. Obviously not when you start the year number 5 overall with hopes of making the playoffs, but you look in the big picture, Brian Kelly starting his tenure at LSU 10-4 and 10-3 would be pretty good. I mean, back-to-back 10 win seasons, but regardless, that's not what fans want to hear. Fans don't want to hear, you know, any sort of pessimism in that regard of potentially going 9-3. So I think 10-2 is still very much on the table. I don't want to overreact. I think 10-2 is on the table. They saw all of their flaws in one game. And like I said before the year, teams, most teams do not have the receivers that what Florida State had. And I think that LSU is going to be able to figure out a way to slow down the passing game against most teams. I mean, you know, you go down the receivers of every other team they play, it's not nearly as dynamic as Florida State, in my opinion. Like, you got Auburn took a bunch of transfers. Ole Miss took a bunch of transfers. Like, you know, Florida doesn't have anybody. Missouri has Luther Burden. So, yeah, I'll stick at 10-2 at this moment. But on paper, I am 1-0.
I think one thing, too, before we move on to the next question here, is that people have said this, and I don't like to read through the mailbag questions first. I like to see it and then have to react in real time for you guys. Also, that would take me more work. But I do agree with Florida State may be the best, if not one of the top two or three best teams they play this year. I said that before the game. I thought it would be A&M, Bama, and Florida State as the most talented and best teams they played. And sure, I think Jordan Travis played great, out of his mind. Yes, Keon Coleman went wild on him. Those things can be true, but when you say, well, chalk it up to, hey, they may be the best team you play. Well, of course, I thought that beforehand. I think if you're viewing it through that vacuum or in a vacuum and through that lens, you also then do you say, okay, what satisfaction as a fan do I take out of, we're 24 points worse than the best teams we're going to play? Because last year that was the case, Georgia, Tennessee, A&M. I mean, the teams that were more talented than them, they got beat by a lot of points. Like, so I think that's something, too, that you have to think about of. Is it fair to even view this game through any lens other than they got beat and not make it more than that?
I get what you're saying. Part of the reason why there has been an uproar over the past 48 hours, or you know, however long we are from the end of the game, is because expectations were so high for this team. And, you know, you get people saying, you know, how we didn't know that this was a hole, If you're subscribed to the Bengal Tiger, you should know what the holes were coming into. If you're subscribed to this YouTube channel, you should have known what the holes were going into this game this year. It's like expectations were to win a national championship, and they should be. But this, to me, was never a national championship winning team. And Florida State at this moment very well could, like you said, be a top three team in the country. Like, we just saw Clemson get blown out. Like we've seen Ohio State struggle. Like, they're very much in that conversation of most complete team in the country. And because LSU was – the expectations were so high going in, that's what makes people panic and go into this frenzy. Whereas last year, if they would have lost – to Florida State by three touchdowns, would have been like, okay, tier one, it happens. But this is, it's a whole different animal this year.
Let's rock on here. Capital City Tiger, do you think we see more creativity in play calling? And do you want to see changes in who starts and where? And he said, O-line, wide receiver, DB. I'm going to take the second part of this question because I think we're on the same page, and I'll let you get the analytical side because you do a lot more film study. O-line, I think that most people, as Matt said to start the podcast, would like to at least see, and this would be a good weekend to do it, against Grambling, what Zaylance Hurd, a freshman five-star offensive tackle, looks like at right tackle, which would then allow Emory Jones, who's your right tackle right now, to slide inside to right guard, which was the position he was recruited to play, interior offensive line. He just stepped up in a big way and started for him as a true freshman at right tackle, but there's been an expected, at some point, to get Hurd on the field in the era of Will Campbell, that you're going to need to slide Emory Jones inside. So when does that happen? We'll see. At wide receiver, I think everyone's going to be on the same page here. If Kyron Lacy is going to drop the football in crucial moments, then you're going to look at other guys. Is it Shelton Sampson? Is it Chris Hilton, obviously? Is it more playing time for a guy like Aaron Anderson? I think all those things may be true. We'll see this weekend. I think one thing that we will say is that Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas aren't coming off the field, and Brian Thomas is their primary blocker in wide receiver, kind of the mix. He's the one who comes in line most of the time, which Jen Brock loves to do. So Brian Thomas isn't going anywhere either. And then with DB, there are no answers here because they don't have any other safeties you would play over Major, Andre Sam, and Greg Brooks. And they clearly don't have any other corners right now that they are trusting beyond Deuce Chestnut, Zy Alexander, and obviously Sage Ryan, who got the start. Deuce played a ton. Matty B, I'll let you take it from there. And unless you want to add something on DB, if you think We have an update today from Brian Kelly and Denver Harris. He's just said Denver Harris is available. And when he asked the status, he just didn't say anything. So we have no info on Denver Harris, who was presumably their best corner that they got this offseason.
Yeah.
I don't know. You went to every single practice, Matty B. So is Welsh, Stamps, or any of these guys viable options for you?
Yeah, and the first part of the question, creativity, Brian Kelly was asked about it, and he kind of laughed at the question. He said, we're not talking about offensive creativity here. Yesterday's press conference was such a trip. Oh, what a time that was. Yeah, so he laughed at that. So it's like – and then went on to say, yes, we need to be more creative. So it didn't really give us any clarity onto what he was thinking, but the run game needs to be more dynamic. This it's the same thing we had last year, right? It's the same exact situation through one game. So we'll see if it gets fixed. To the Denver Harris part of the equation, because I think you laid out everything else pretty well. We actually have two other questions about Denver Harris on here, so we can talk about him briefly.
You read ahead.
Well, yeah, I had to go through and get all these imposters out of here that are all
arguing
and talking and trolling in here. It was a very messy board. But two more questions in here on Denver Harris. I don't know where the other one went. But yeah, when is it time to let Denver Harris play? You know, issues throughout fall camp, blah, blah, blah. It's rehashing. For me, it's rehashing what I've said the past 6 months, pretty much, of this secondary's ceiling. This defense's ceiling cannot be reached if Denver Harris is not in the starting lineup and not playing significant minutes or significant snaps. Like, it's painfully obvious to me. Like, Deuce Chestnut, Zy Alexander, Sage Ryan, you know, LaTerrence Welsh, Ashton Stamps, good players. Denver Harris is the difference. And you saw on Sunday what it looks like when you have Keon Coleman, Johnny Wilson going against Deuce Chestnut and Sage Ryan and Zy Alexander compared to potentially Denver Harris. Now, maybe Denver Harris gets burnt out there. Maybe he blows an assignment. All that stuff is very, very possible. I'm not saying that he is the answer to everything. But as far as reaching your full potential as a defense, you need Mason Smith on the field. You need Denver Harris on the field. Like, that's just pain. It's just obvious to me, because that's the only chance you reach that position where you could win 11 straight games and make the playoffs. Because that's really, it's that simple to me. I understand benching Denver Harris and making him learn through this, and maybe he hasn't been great in practice, but the talent is the talent, bottom line.
It's a good way to put it. Is that the old they are who we thought they were, but reverse, we are who we thought we were. Damon Targaryen and a couple others asked about Denver Harris, so we got that one knocked out. We'll see. Look, he just said available. I don't know what that means. He wasn't even getting third team reps in camp. Sometime he was just standing there.
Yeah, Mason Cox was the other one who asked about Denver Harris.
Okay, shout out to cool. Let's scroll back up here. I got ahead of myself. Hold That Tiger asked. Hold That Tiger 23. What personnel would you like to see in weeks 2 and 3? So 2's Grambling, 3's at Mississippi State at 11 a.m. Personally, I'd like to see Hurd, which we've talked about, Sampson, who could play at wide receiver, obviously, Stamps, who we just noted at corner, and Toviano, who's more of a hybrid safety corner nickel. So if you wanted to get him on the field, I guess you could try. Matty B, you, main personnel changes you might would like to see.
I do think they will try some player. Well, they'll try out. Everybody will play against Grambling, but even Mississippi State, it'll be interesting to see. Stamps, Toviano. Do I think I would play Toviano over Sam Burns or Brooks? Probably not. I think Brooks actually was pretty good. I think, heck, if Burns wasn't able to break up that pass against Keon Coleman, nobody was breaking up that
pass.
Oh,
he had his hand inside both arms, ripped it out. Keon Coleman just.
Like, yeah, I don't fault Major Burns for that.
No, Major Burns and Greg Brooks are never coming off the field.
Yeah, no. And also, I think they're very good. And Andre Sam, I think, had ups and downs. But overall, I think we saw enough of him in fall camp. And I think they trust him a lot, as evident of him starting. I don't think he's coming off the field either. I just don't really see a spot in where Toviano adds value unless you're in, like, a dime package, obviously. And you're in those, like, 60 Bs packages and whatnot. And then Stamps. I mean, would Stamps have solved anything on the outside? Like, yeah, you could have tried him, but I don't know if he's better than Deuce or Sage. He might be on their level already, which is a massive accomplishment, but I don't think he would have provided anything that they didn't, in a sense. So all this stuff about bringing people in, like, you know, I'm a basketball guy, so yeah, I love depth. I love rotating guys in, but that's just not really how football works, in a sense of you don't take Greg Brooks off the field to put JV and Toviano on the field for three snaps, and just, it's not, I don't know, it's not like that to me.
Yeah, I think that what you say is about, and look, it's a one game sample size, and yes, I want to see these guys play a good amount of games when we're talking about players like an Andre Sam, you know, who are transfers. Like, I know what Major Burns and Greg Brooks are because I watched them in high school. I watched them when they were in college starting their careers, and now I've seen them multiple years as starters for LSU. So, like, I know exactly what they are. They're not coming off the field. Now we're starting to get to see guys like Andre Sam for the first time. And before we even judge kind of like how they look or if they're going to make any moves, I think it's important to remember things like this. That was Andre Sam's 49th. So this weekend will be Andre Sam's 50th college start. Guys like Toviano have never played a game in college, essentially. Like, you're not in big moments going to just take those guys out and wholesale replace them with true freshmen.
In the first game of the year, especially.
No, especially not at a starting spot in the defensive backfield like that, where communication and knowing your assignments and all those things are equally as important as being talented. But we'll see. I would like to see what these guys look like this weekend. And yeah, no doubt they're very talented. They're eventually going to play. But
yes,
the starters are the starters for a reason. I don't think anything's shuffling there immediately with those guys in the defensive backfield at safety. Jungle Fever Tiger, how can the staff put Jaden in the best position to be successful given he is who he is? And how does House adjust giving these big holes on defense? I mean, I guess I'll let you dive into both those. I also think with the first question of Jaden, I think maybe the staff is putting Jaden in the best position for what he is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's the argument. I think fans are more frustrated that it's not just a vertical game or, you know, an explosive five wide and doing it like they did in 2019. And maybe for Jaden, this is the most efficient way to use him, which is letting him RPO run, kind of use his legs, and then throw a lot of short intermediate stuff that he usually hits pretty well. Like,
yeah,
I think that's what they want to do.
I agree. I think you laid that out well. I think this is the best position for him to be successful at this level in the SEC. Obviously, you go back to the Arizona State film, it's very different, but I mean, he had the freedom he had at Arizona State to just chuck the ball wherever he wanted and kind of just hope and pray it worked out. And you can tell last year he didn't want to do what he did at Arizona State. He wanted to be a part of a team that was winning games and wanted to contribute to winning, and that's why he didn't force the ball downfield. Well, through one game, he already has one interception. I think this is who he is. And as I said on the postgame podcast, like, I think he's a really good quarterback, but ultimately, like, expecting him to take this massive step forward was probably a mistake on my part and, you know, everybody's part as a collective, to be like, this is going to be a brand new player. No, it's not. Now, I think Mike Denbrock, to me, I think could have tried some different things, but I think they were just really – they were trying to hang on to a degree. And they were like, we're going to run what we know. We're going to do what we know works. And so, yeah, they didn't really try anything new offensively to my eye.
I think, too, from Brian Kelly chasing points in the first quarter, they knew defensively they probably weren't going to be able to keep pace, and it was going to take scoring. So to deviate from what they know and what they want to do and hold on to the football, and they were very methodical last year, like, that was – I could understand that being the game plan, at least in that first half at Florida State before
–
things unraveled.
Yeah, real quick. It all comes back to they needed to, in order to win, our only chance of winning this game was trying new things, like blitzing Harold Perkins, like doing things that might not work, but you had to like take chances in this game. And they didn't really take those chances. Harold Perkins played zone, you know, Jaden Daniels did what he does. Like, it didn't feel like those chances were taken. Now obviously they went for it on fourth down. Credit to Brian Kelly for those. But they didn't work. So, you know, you lose the game.
And yes, just about House and the holes in the defense. I think more surprising than anything for me, Maddie B, is that last year LSU was not only a second half team defensively, they certainly were a second half team. They would give some stuff up in the first half and then clamp down. To be give up 14 points in the first half, be winning, and then to give up 31 unanswered was unlike anything we had seen from a Matt House defense a year ago. Like, you can, yes, third down defense was bad all year, all these things, but when it came to just purely viewing a game between a first half and a second half, they were a second half team. This year, boy, out of the gates, when you get blown out 31-0, you're very far from a second half team. You were non-existent in the second half, and that was largely defensive, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. I give up, was it six straight touchdowns, six straight scores? I don't have anything to add there. The second half, like you said, that was the biggest difference. That was the most jarring thing. They're going to try out Perkins. They're going to try out Mason Smith this week, which gets into Capital City's next question of, does Big Number Zero play this weekend? Brian Kelly said he'll play around 30 snaps, which is what I would have expected him to play against Florida State. Obviously, maybe not that much if he was actually, since he's actually quite injured, coming off the injury, I guess. But yeah, 30 snaps this weekend, that's fine. I think 20 is probably fine, but 30 snaps, hope that'll get him through the first half, maybe first three quarters, and then rest him after that.
And obviously, Mason Smith's coming off a knee injury that ended his season, kept him out. I don't even know, is it even the knee anymore, because he tweaked his ankle in camp? Say it again.
Yeah, he tweaked his ankle in camp and he was limping around. Like, the lower body in general is a concern for me.
Yeah, right, so I don't think he's still having to recover from the ACL surgery and all that. I think it's like getting banged up in camp and tweaking his ankle. And he was kind of hobbling around the sidelines this weekend, obviously, in street clothes. Like, so Brian Kelly said that before the FSU game. He was like, even if he could, like, even if the NCAA didn't have him suspended for a game, I'm not sure how much he would be able to play in this one. And then when he was asked about week two against Grambling, and I can tell you just from the tone in his voice, he was like, we would be thrilled if we got 30 snaps out of him. So you are thinking now of, okay, Mason Smith, maybe Mississippi State SEC opens and he can play half the game, like, or something like that. So we're not quite there, it seems, of Mason being fully ready to roll, which could be a storyline to keep an eye on, but he will play this weekend. NolaFan33, obviously LSU can run the ball, but what do you guys make of the unwillingness to even really try and establish the run early in the game? Do you think they knew they wouldn't be able to move the ball on the ground? This is a bit of an imperfect due to Jaden's, but Jaden attempted 22 passes in the first half and just 9 handoffs to the running backs. Josh Williams, a guy we assumed would lead the running back room, had 3 carries and in a 3-point ball game going into half. I guess I should also add all 3 running backs, Trey Bradford, Josh Williams, and Noah Kane, who played, all had 4 touches. So they very much spread it out there. Matty B, do you feel like they did – were they invested in the run from the start, or did they just have to abandon it after halftime?
I don't think they were ever invested in the run. I think with this offense, Jaden Daniels – is going to be your leading rusher, whether Brian Kelly wants it or not. Brian Kelly said in the press conference yesterday, we don't want Jaden Daniels to be our leading rusher. Well, based on the way they run the ball, based on the way, they scheme up the run, based on the way that they were unable to block Braden Fisk, Fabian Lovett, go down the list, they can't run the ball. And I'm not sure how drastically that changes, because this is the same offensive line as last year. And that's been a positive throughout the offseason, It's been, they get Dellinger back. They get Turner back. They get all these players back on the offensive line. Well, last year they couldn't really run the ball with the running back. And so this year, they're returning, but it's probably still going to be not a strength for this offense. So they're in the same position as last year. And that's kind of a theme with this team through one game so far. Obviously, a lot of season left, but the holes are still the holes, and the inability to run the ball. You did a great job before on our preview podcast. It's like, that's a key to the game. They need to be able to run the ball this year. They couldn't do it last year. Well, it's the same offensive line. It's the same running backs. It's the same quarterback. It's the same run game as last year.
This is my biggest concern now for the season. And I said all year that the biggest worry for the team position wise would be corner. The biggest worry or concern for the actual philosophy or the execution side may well be that they can't run the football without it being Jaden. And they had longs of what? Well, no Cam Williams for 2 yards. Trey Bradford for 4 yards. Josh Williams obviously broke one off the right side for 35, but he finished beyond that with 3 for 13 yards. So they had one good run of the entire game. And essentially didn't – they ran it 13 times with those guys. Yeah. Didn't try. 12 times. Yeah. I don't know either, Matty B, what – I want to tread lightly here. I'm not trying to get clipped and old takes exposed. I think it might also be as much on the offensive line and everything else that's in motion than just the running backs. Like, I'm not sure John Emery or Logan Diggs or all that, like, changes that much for me.
No. Leonard Fournette's not walking through that door.
No. So they have a variety of backs, sure. But if the blocking's not there and these guys aren't tearing it apart, then I don't know what adding a couple more guys to that mix that you're already splitting touches does for you. Like Logan Diggs or John Emery they could give you some sparks, but neither of them are carrying it 20 something times. Like these other guys are all going to play. And
yeah,
at least out of game one, it looked exactly like it did a year ago. So that's concerning. It's maybe the biggest concern. If you cannot run the football, then everyone knows you're just throwing it. And that's not a good spot to be in. Cicerone 3, is this officially the worst LSU team of all time? I'm going to go no.
You're older than me. You might have more history than me, but I don't think so.
Many teams that are worse. Ernie Ball 5, any update on Diggs? Logan Diggs was a coach's choice not to play because of what Brian Kelly said was a hamstring injury that he was kind of working through. I'm a little bit baffled at why you share an injury report all week and just don't mention someone who has a hamstring injury, unless he got it getting on the plane or something.
Yeah, they it sounded like he hadn't practiced enough at full speed. And like you said, on an injury report, I think he probably just should have been questionable going into the game or something and just suited up and then not played. So, yeah.
Out. But I don't know if he'll play this weekend because he's battling what appears to be some sort of lower leg injury that has kept him, as Matty B said, from practicing fully, is what Kelly said. But we'll see if he gets back out there this weekend. And he's a Notre Dame transfer running back, for those curious. What's more likely? Irish Tiger 18 asked, FSU's a top five team in the country, and LSU just didn't consistently execute to win the game. Or FSU's a good, not great team, and LSU regressed and will struggle to 8-9. Eight and nine game wins, so it'd be 8-4, 9-5, or 9-3. I think it could be a mixture of both of those two things.
No, I think Florida State's actually really good. I think LSU is still a really good team. I think LSU is going to be fine this year, even if they do win 9 games because they drop 2 SEC games. Like if they go 6-2 in conference, Shay, they end the year 9-3 overall. Like. But you went 6-2 in conference, and you're still one of the best teams in the SEC. Like they're going to be a top 15 team regardless if they go 9-3, probably. Like,
yep.
It's still a really good team. They just got their doors blown off by, in my opinion, one of the top 4 teams in the country, and the matchup was awful. You probably couldn't drop a worse matchup for LSU in week one.
Nope, I agree. I think that it can be true that Florida State is good, but I don't necessarily mean. I don't think LSU's regressed, and I also think if it's regressed in any areas, it's not coaching, it's talent. Like Mekhi Garner and Jarrett Bernard Converse, Matty B, you've said it a million times, they bailed them out in the most massive of way last year as transfer corners. Like if you don't hit on those guys again, then it's a talent deficiency thing. It's not a really a regression in terms of the overall team. It's just you don't have as good of players as you did in the spot. We'll see. Like I said, we gave our predictions. We're sticking with them. LC8, is the mailman going to get starting reps this week at cornerback? Is the mailman Denver Harris?
The mailman is Ashton Stamps.
The mailman, right?
Ashton Stamps is the mailman.
I got it. All right. Yes. I would see no way you're not putting him out there against Grambling to at least let him get his feet wet.
Wait. But he said starting reps, though. I don't think he starts.
Oh, starting reps. No, I don't think so.
I don't think he starts, but he gets. Yes, he should get a lot of reps. Terrence Wells should as well. So,
LWT, being that those DBs seem to be left on an island at time, wouldn't it just be easier if they just sent blitzes at the quarterback and let the DBs at least try to get physical with him at the line of scrimmage to get JT off his spot? Results probably don't change a lot, but I think it would have helped some, especially if Welsh and Harris played. Those guys, those aren't short guys. I don't know. I think Harris is really talented, so that would have helped. I'm not sure Welsh would have. If Welsh was better than those guys, he'd be playing. Like
the Major Burns is 6'2". Like what? I don't. I understand he caught on. Deuce Chestnut got mossed a couple times. Sure, yes. But he did the same thing to Major Burns. This is a guy who has, I think, a 91% catch rate in contested catches. Keon Coleman.
He's just a jump out of the gym basketball player.
Yeah, he's just better than anybody LSU has on their defense in their secondary. Flat out better. I just this matchup to me was always going to be decided in that respect, where Florida State could make explosive plays like that, and LSU could not. LSU, that was another jarring thing, along with not being able to run the ball. Where LSU, we've talked about explosive plays so much, like, it was so obvious where I was like, all right, Florida State's not moving it like consistently, but then they hit the big play and they score a touchdown. LSU was moving it down the field and couldn't finish drives, because that's a hell of a lot harder than just hitting one 30, 40 yard pass and being there in the end zone. Like, the explosiveness bails you out of so many situations, and LSU does not have that. So they have to be perfect on offense. And that is very concerning. Anyways, I know I got off topic asking that about a defense question, but yeah.
All right. Chandler with a 3 instead of an E. He gets very in depth here. I'm going to give you I'm just going to give you guys. He wrote a book.
There's not even a question in here.
It's
I don't see a question
mark. He's thinking out loud. And wrote an essay, but I've read it now, and I'm going to give you the brief synopsis here, the Cliff's Notes version.
Okay.
He basically wants to know what's up with Den Brock's offensive philosophy, most notably the run game, which he says are as creative as Pop Warner calls. I'll let you handle that one on thoughts on just the run game philosophy. But he says we have a quarterback bordering on generational for his ability to run. And the best we're doing to get him in space are bone stock read options, the occasional design rollout, and a rare 3-option RPO that gets him out on the edge where he can make a short throw or beat a defender to the edge. Well, they do like that in like that tight end comes across.
Yeah.
Jaden exactly. can take it, and then either Jaden can run or just dump it really quickly to Mason. And they did it in the FSU game. It picked up a first down on the very first drive of the game.
They also got stuffed on the fourth down on that play, but yeah.
They did. And on that play, it looked like Emory Jones kind of stepped out and tripped Mason a little bit when he was coming across. And then that made it hesitant when he was giving it to Josh Williams. And as Brian Kelly said, they just didn't execute very well. But you've watched a lot of LSU's film now from last year. So you know that, and you did it at Cincinnati as well, watching it. Den Brock's philosophy, are you beefing with it right now? Is that an issue for you right now? Or that they just don't execute it? Like, if they executed it, it would work.
The whole thing was, we were last year, I don't think it fit the personnel. This year, it was supposed to fit the personnel more because you added all those tight ends and Connor Gilbreth and Mac Markway and stuff. We didn't even see a ton of 2 tight end stuff. I mean, Gilbreth hardly on the field. Markway, I thought I saw Markway like once or twice or something. I don't remember. I hardly saw him. And yeah, it just didn't, again, it didn't look like a team that fit what Den Brock was trying to do. And the skill position players obviously dropped passes. Like, there's a large amount you can put on the players. But like I said before, it looked like the same offense as last year. And the limitations of last year's offense were the same as the limitations for this year's offense. Which isn't surprising when you look at the personnel, because it's the same personnel, but the whole offseason has been about being more explosive, finding ways to get players the ball in different areas, and none of that was true. So I do beef with that a little bit, and at the same time, I think the players have plenty of on their shoulders as well. When you can't block a team, it's hard to run an offense.
LC8 asked if there's evidence Sage Ryan's ever made a play. A little harsh there, LC8. I'm going to give you the reality of the situation. Sage Ryan right now is the best option they have, and he's going to play. If there were better options, they would be in the game. Sage played last year. Sage is going to play this year.
Yeah.
just where it's at. And that's a tough matchup for him to come out with, especially he's a natural safety who can play nickel, but now they've got him at corner. They say he can turn and run. They say he's got the speed, all these things, obviously just a natural football player, but the corner's a tough spot for a guy like that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add here.
Tiger King 53, can you remember a more embarrassing loss? Troy comes to mind, but getting beat down in primetime with the whole country watching after this team being so hyped up stings quite a bit. Yes, A&M last year would be more embarrassing. You got run by a team that, while talented, had a losing record and was barely beating, did not beat Appalachian State, and was barely beating other very, very bad teams. The year prior, Kansas State would be worse. You were so down as a program that you started a receiver at quarterback and Kansas State scored at will for about 9 drives in a row. Yeah, I can think of a number of more embarrassing losses than getting beat by a top 5 team when you were winning at halftime.
I mean, and then you go to 2020 and 2021.
Well, yeah,
and you came off
a 15-0 national championship in 2020. You lost to Mississippi State in the opening week, and Will Rogers set about every passing record in the world on you with Mike Leach, RIP. Yeah, I can think of a lot of embarrassing ones.
I mean, yeah, it's football.
I'm not sure how embarrassing this loss was. It was just a second half that was like, wait, what? Like 31-0.
And I know for LSU fans, it feels like, oh, the whole world is watching and they're laughing at us and all that stuff. And sure, you know, to a degree, maybe.
And they are. Matthew, you want to see that?
Yeah, like maybe to a degree. I felt like, honestly, a large portion of people left that game way more impressed with Florida State than they were down on LSU.
That's correct.
Like, people left that game saying, whoa, Florida State's doing this to LSU. Like, I don't care what LSU team this is. This is a Florida State team that just did that, that had that second half run. And we saw in the first half what LSU, that LSU not only could compete with them, but potentially, you know, hang with them and beat them. Like, this isn't some wire-to-wire beat down. This was a second half.
No, this, like, Duke, Clemson.
That's embarrassing.
No one's saying, oh my God, you know, Duke is a playoff team. It was, yikes, Clemson. Why? Come on now. Exactly. Texas State, Baylor losing is like, no one's saying Texas State should be in the Big 12. Like, they're legit. They're saying, man, what? Like, you're Dave Aranda? What? You're 3 or whatever? You lose to Texas State out of the gates? You're 4? No one left that game being like, damn, LSU ain't it. Everyone left it saying, boy, Florida State looks good.
Yeah, that, in my opinion, yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're an LSU fan, so you don't really care what everybody else thinks.
I know.
You're in your own misery, and I hear you. Grape Swisha, what's worse, our game one performance or our fan base? But ding, ding, rim shot. I can't really do one very well, but I don't know. Fans, they're short for fanatics, right?
Love fans. Isn't,
this is the expected response after you lose a game.
Yeah, I love
you fans. Melt.
This is great.
Cherry's Backpack. All right, for real, my favorite username that's ever existed. Shout out Jarrell Cherry. Shout out the bricks that went in the backpack. Cherry's Backpack, which freshman are y'all most excited about seeing against Grambling? We've touched on a lot of them already. I want to see Kamorian Pimpton at tight end. I want to see Deshaun Womack get on the field.
Oh, I need to see Deshaun Womack on the field. Okay, yeah. I was going to go like Shelton Sampson or Caleb Jackson, but you sold me. I want to see Deshaun Womack on the field. So
you got it. He was the highest ranked kid you signed, a 5-star. He was absolutely brilliant at St. Francis. They played nothing but elite competition. And I refuse to believe he can't just go out there and show me something.
Can I also say Savion wasn't great against Florida State.
But he was. I rewatched the whole game, though. Like,
go ahead.
He wasn't terrible.
Okay. No. Yeah. No. He was not terrible. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't want to make it sound like that.
But he was like you walked away like, damn, Paris Chan made some – or Braden Swinson made some plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And
like,
I never
thought we were going to say that about Savion. Like, damn, exactly. Hey, he made some plays. Like,
exactly. So it's I'm not saying Womack or Quincy Wiggins or Paris Chan should start over him. Definitely not. But I just want to see Deshaun Womack. Just throw him.
Just roll him out there. Put him in that C-ball get ball role that old Harold Perkins got to play last year.
We got to name a podcast that C-ball get ball.
Beautiful. Misled Alarm 92. What's worse, LSU's week one performance for the past 5 years or being stuck in a political conversation with your relatives at Thanksgiving. It's the political conversation with your relatives at Thanksgiving. And it's not close. You can bounce back from a week one loss. It's tough to bounce back and get away from that Thanksgiving conversation.
Conversations in general at Thanksgiving are always something else. So, yeah, there you go.
Birkenstock wants to know why you always ignore him, Matthew, and probably delete almost everything that he posts. So, Burke, I love you. Don't worry.
I told him Burke's probably the funniest person on the board. Burke's probably one of the funniest people on the board.
Yeah. Yeah. Burke's been rolling with us for a long time. Shout out, Burke. Cairo Tiger talks about personnel changes, but he said, what do you want to see in the next couple of weeks? Like worked in. And he offered up some options. Younger DBs, wide receivers 2 through 4, Hurd with Emory Jones to right guard, and John Emery and Logan Diggs like being back and playing at running back. I'll choose Hurd, and I think that Hurd, like a lot of these are like maybe boosts or like, okay, yeah, if you played Logan Diggs or Emery, well, they're all still splitting touches. And if you got Shelton Sampson in and you featured Aaron Anderson more, you threw some verticals to Chris Hilton, that's like three times a game, four times a game.
Yeah.
Hurd would be a move that maybe could change the trajectory of your season if he ends up being excellent, right? Like if he could really deliver for you, and then Emery's at right guard, and then maybe it sparks something, and then he would be playing every down, and it would be quite important. So
yeah,
that's the one I'm curious if it's happening, it needs to happen. Like that has to start now, right? Like you'd have to get him out there in Grambling,
yep,
get his feet wet, because then it's nothing but SEC games for a while.
It's the same situation as last year with Will Campbell. And
they played musical chairs last year. Brad Davis isn't afraid to do it. Let's see what happens. Are we Capital City Tiger? Are we sure Scott Woodward made the right hire at head coach? Yes. If we viewed this and said they're going to reach the expectations you set, or let's say that they win 9 games, even they go 9-3, and they win a bowl game, they get to 10 wins. You were coming off back-to-back 500 seasons. You were coming off the first losing season since 1999 when Jerry DiNardo was head coach. That's more than 25 years or however long it's been. And you made a hire who took over a roster with fewer than 40 players. And in the first 2 seasons, he got you at least one SEC West championship and got you to 10 wins both years. I would say that that would have been the right hire, right?
Yes, that's yes, yeah. Not even a question. I mean, you okay. First of all, and then you go look at the other candidates that we were, you know, floating out there and stuff. Which who knows whatever they were. It's
true.
Like, it's not like the other candidates were lighting it up out here. You want Jimbo back? You want Jimbo? Go get Jimbo. There you go. No, he's definitely, like you said, I think you laid it out well. He has them very, very much as people want to critique every single thing after a loss. Come on now, I mean.
Cairo Tiger, how much changed Velshi would have taken points and been up 23-14 at half? I can only say that you get to go in the locker room and come back out and the scoreboard's going to remain the same. So they would have lost by 20 and not 24 or 19.
They would have lost by what, 15 instead of 21? Yeah, it's not like it's a morale thing where it's like, oh, we were down at half. Now we're up. No, y'all.
Yeah, they were
up.
Winning at halftime.
They were up. They were winning.
If anything, you should have some extra juice of like, man, we should have scored those other ones. We should be beating these dudes like, you know, 24-14 right now. Let's go. Like, yeah, that doesn't do anything for me.
No, nothing. I think they were the right decisions, both of them. I'll go on record. The second one's obviously a little you could sketchy. First one's no doubter from the one. You can argue the play call, all this stuff, but
well, and yeah. I won't even argue the play call or the go for it on the one, because there is some built-in capital in doing it, because you know that if you don't succeed, they have to start at the one, and then that really forces them into a punt, basically, or at least run the ball a few times and see if they can pop a pass, or they're getting a safety, or they're punting it. The issue I have is you took a sack on that play.
Yeah.
So now you're at the – they don't start the one. You had no advantage of going for it anymore. And then the second one, I don't know why they're still chasing points. I would have taken the field goal, but it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Clarence Beeks, who says, I'll keep it simple. Does LSU have more than 2 run plays? Only the run the zone stretch and the zone read. Maddie B, they've got more than two, huh?
Do they? How many more do they have? You've watched the game. You did watch the film stuff.
Too, I don't know. They only run it 12 times. Does it really
matter? Oh, it's very true. Very true. They only ran it 12 times, probably 2-3 plays. No, they don't.
They don't block those plays anyways right now.
They don't block. They can't block a run anyway, so what does it matter?
I don't know how they're going to fix it, but we'll see. Famous Amos, start, bench, cut. Ooh, that's brutal. O-line, corner, receiver as a position group.
Start receivers, bench, O-line, cut corners.
Yeah. Bonus round. Oh, thanks. Want to do even more of this, Famous Amos. Head coach, OC, DC. Oh, man, y'all are brutal.
Jesus. Start, head coach.
I'm not doing any we're on one game here.
There you go. Start all of them. There you go. Yeah. We'll see. Get back to me in 3 weeks. I might have a different
answer. Yeah. Give me half a season. This became a topic. LC8 said Frazier, Ryan, Lacey. Okay, let's get rid of cut here. Let's just do start bench. Frazier, we've already talked about. I would want to see what Emory Jones would look like at right guard. I thought that before this game, so that doesn't really change anything. Sage Ryan, you don't have – I actually like Sage Ryan. He's fine. I just don't think he's a corner, and I also don't think you have other options. Kyron Lacy, if he continues to – like, people think we were making it up that Kyron Lacy, like, caught all – like, he was catching balls in fall camp, balls in spring.
It didn't look
spring
the same.
Game, he went over the top on the first play and made a grab that he turns into a touchdown. Like, we saw it. But we've also seen when the lights are on and really bright, he's had some bad drops. I would like to see more of a rotation at receiver, and I want to see what Hilton and Shelton Sampson and some other guys can do if they get those three or four chances a game, much like Lacy does.
Yeah.
You know, Lacy also made a good catch where he also stayed in bounds and got upfield. So he's not getting benched, but I would like to see a rotation.
Yeah.
If Mekhi Garner were back this season, would Sunday night have been different? Yeah. I'd think that he would have made a couple plays, but he wouldn't have been able to make them all. Jordan Travis.
Yeah, they wouldn't have won the game.
Dropping dimes, and Keon Coleman was going off. And he can't guard Johnny Wilson as well. So even if he had blocked somebody out, they would have just thrown it to the other guy. And that would have been
a problem.
That would have been that. Both guys went over 100 yards. That was Christian Case.
Scroll down.
Mike's to class. Now they're all hating. There is the Mason Cox Denver Harris question. We talked about that. Wes 167, why is our coaching staff so poor against FSU? Why did the team have no fight? Why was our game plan, especially defensively, so poor? How could something like that be approved? I think all this comes down to exactly what Brian Kelly said, that they thought they were further along and better than they actually are.
I don't know. Yeah, the question insinuates that they're like, all right, well, you know, we're just going to roll out there and lose, when they actually, I thought defensively in the first half, were actually really good for outside of the two drives where Florida State scored. If we remember, they was like four straight drives where they forced a turnover or a punt.
They also went to the red zone on 5 of 6 offensive possessions. In the first half, they just chased points and came away with nothing twice.
Yeah. Literally LSU won the first half by more than 3 points. If you just look at like analytically, like how, you know, EPA or whatever you want to look at it as, like, they won the first half convincingly. The problem is they didn't capitalize, and the problem is they gave up explosive plays. Second half, obviously, it was a different story. But the game plan in the first half was fine. If anything, you want to critique the game plan in the second half and not adjusting. Like, you can critique that way more than, I think, the initial game plan.
All right. Mason Cox, going into Grambling, he's basically asking in the SEC, what freshman could jump into starting roles. Feels like BK needs to just let them go this week to see what we have. I'd agree with that. So, like, get the guys out there this week, see what they look like in a college game.
Yeah.
And if we're actually talking starting roles, that's very minimized. It's going to be Zaylance Hurd maybe at some point, maybe an Ashton Stamps at some point. I don't know how many freshmen on this team will ultimately just be like clear-cut starters. Like, I could see Shelton Sampson starts a game or something, but like Aaron Anderson, Kyron Lacy didn't even start this week. Start means you played the first snap. It was Aaron Anderson. So like,
yeah,
there are guys who could snap and start, but I don't know about full-time starters yet beyond Hurd.
Yeah. Tiger Beast 11 asked like four questions. Will Aaron Anderson start in the slot? Technically, he started this past game. I think he'll get more receptions moving forward, but that he actually started. The online shuffle. Martinez at center is not something we've talked about, but some people have brought it up. I mean, if Martinez was better than Turner, they would have gone to him. And I'm not saying that facetiously because I understand. I mean, coaches get things wrong all the time, week one. But this isn't just a week one thing. They had last year, they had this summer, they had the spring, the fall, and Martinez never once beat out Turner when they were both healthy.
And I'll also add something that usually doesn't happen in races like this. Let's say two people are battling for one position. Charles Turner was not there all spring, so Marlon Martinez got every first team rep. So they know exactly what
Yeah.
both are if they're choosing. And if it is that close, then we'll see Marlon Martinez. Like
Yeah.
we
But
will. If we don't, that means it's not that close. So
Yeah.
that's just something to keep an eye on. Cairo 1989 asked, what does LSU have to do to find a run game that doesn't include JD doing it all? You obviously
Block.
don't want to take his legs away, but it seems like a run game's been absent for years. It was absent last year. It's right currently absent this year. I don't really know
Block.
beyond blocking and executing how they're going to get better. Like it sounds so fundamental because it is. They're if you're running a play, you have to do the correct things and block and execute for that play to work. Right now, they're so poor at doing that when it comes to running the football, not including Jaden.
Yeah.
I don't, I, so I don't have an answer. I don't know
No, I don't.
because we didn't see one last year. Tiger Bread 9, should Jones move to right guard and Hurd come in for Frazier struggles? Yeah, we've talked about that a bunch. I would certainly think that's an option there. Going to look at some point. You absolutely will if it continues to be an issue for you. Why Nate Bratt 21? Why isn't Welsh getting any PT? I could have missed him, but I don't think he played very much. First off, he did play, and this is going to be a negative. It wasn't a corner; it was on special teams. On that Aaron Anderson punt, he had just stood there, and he was one of the guys that was playing as a gunner that had come in and, or I guess, blocking an outside guy, and had come in. And when Anderson fumbled that punt, he didn't. He just kind of looked, and four Florida State guys just dove on it, and it happened to bounce out to right where he was, and then he jumped down. So I think when you that's like stuff Brian Kelly's talking about is like being in the moment, being present, understanding every rep. And if you're not doing that on special teams, they're not playing you at corner. I don't know. You went to every practice, Matty B.
He's not better than Deuce Chestnut is
He
either.
never
I
got
mean,
first team. He was always second team. So like,
Ashton Stamps was ahead of him by the time fall camp ended. So there you
and
go.
it's only year two. Look, he played special teams
Yes.
all last year, and now it's his first game of his second season. So he's got plenty of time to figure it out. There wasn't an expectation he would be starting, but I also don't think it's an answer they turn to right now for some new starter. Coach K7, what's your take on the play of Savion Jones? Didn't seem as mobile as last year, more like Gay, giving up edge containment a few times. Just wanted for your thoughts. Thanks for appreciate the coverage. Thanks, Coach K. We said it briefly, but any other thoughts? I guess, Matty B, we thought that he would be more of an impact player than we saw across four quarters, but that certainly maybe doesn't mean anything for the long term.
Last year he was so, what's the word I'm looking for? Idolized, I guess. I don't know. Because everybody was so mad at Ollie Gay and didn't see what he did well. Then it's like, oh, put Savion in, put Savion in. Well, you put Savion in, and he's probably a better pass rusher than Ollie Gay, but he also has the deficiencies in the run game, which have been cataloged before or have been talked about before. So give take. Ultimately, they're going to need Savion Jones to be much better than he was on Sunday, and I think he can be better. The question is, can he be, great, or can he be close to great? And I don't know if he can reach that level yet, but we'll see.
I'm with you. I was very high on Savion coming into the year. I had him as a breakout player. I'm
He
not
still
selling
could
any
be.
stock. I want to see how he
Yeah,
does.
still could be.
Bourbon and Cheerios, guys. First time, long time. Love the show. Here we go. He actually kept it short. If you spend all season transitioning Perkins to a middle linebacker, do you consider blowing that up after one game? This is a great question. The answer is going to be no. And they focused on this all offseason for a reason. I think what Brian Kelly and Matt House, more specifically, the defense coordinator, are going to have to find is striking that balance between using Perkins as an edge rusher type and also playing him at middle linebacker, having him be more impactful. You are not going to want to go through every game, Matty B, with a stat line of no tackles for loss, no sacks. That's an impossible stat line for your best player on defense to have. So I think that we also have to be mindful of there's probably been many conversations with Harold about, I want to be developed into a linebacker. I don't want to be just a gadget player. This is what's best for maybe my future, my NFL. And I know people are going to say, well, he plays at LSU right now. Like, why should the coaching staff care about that? Yes, they should be caring about winning. You also don't get to go out there and pimp out all your NFL guys and say you develop these NFL players if you're not actually developing them when they're here and trying to put them on that path. So your thoughts, but no, they're not going to blow it up, but it's got to find some happy medium until he's further along.
Yeah, that was the most jarring thing is the whole offseason they've kind of scoffed. They've kind of laughed at the idea that Harold Perkins isn't going to be attacking. Like they were the whole time it was like, oh, well, we're going to be bringing him from different spots, so they're not going to be able to block him in the way that they did last year where they're going to be able to load up. Well, they didn't even use him in a blitzing way. They, what was it, seven pass rushes to 28 coverage snaps? Like, you can – the way that they have approached it throughout the offseason was, again, we're going to blitz him up the middle. We're going to blitz him off the edge. We're going to blitz him to the left, the right, all this stuff. They blitzed him seven times. Like, if that number isn't closer to 15-15, I will be shocked against Mississippi State. I will be shocked. And Mississippi State is a very different offense than Florida State. They hired the offensive coordinator from Appalachian State who ran more of a zone run scheme. So I don't even know how many opportunities he's going to have as a pass rusher because they're probably going to need him in the run game. So, bright side, I think he's actually not bad inside linebacker despite what, PFF graded and whatnot. But, they need him to be a pass rusher at least 50% of the time, in my opinion.
Oh, here's second final question. You asked what's the most important thing for the Falcons to beat the Patriots. I would say don't blow the lead.
Kyle Pitts.
Is there a first, second, or third round running back on this roster? I would say that if there is, it's Caleb Jackson.
Yes.
But I think another thing to remember is this is why we equate NFL or recruiting rankings to the NFL draft. That would make you a top 100 player. And then you also factor in that running backs devalued a good bit. If you're not a first rounder, then you're going to be in a split system anyways. So I would say that by definition, I don't think LSU has a top 100 prospect on the team that's in the running back room right now. Bradford was in the hundreds. Oh, Emory was a five-star. So he would be the only one. And I don't think Emory is going to be in the first three rounds.
No. Caleb Jackson is the only one potentially. So
five for five. Oh God, I got body slammed twice on people's actual usernames. Okay. Thank you. Shout out five for five. He just said move Jones inside, start Martinez and Hurd. What are your thoughts on these statements of fact? Matty B, you did say, look, maybe Martinez. So that wouldn't surprise me if that was ultimately the starting lineup if they did make Hurd a starter, but that would just mean that the Turner Martinez battle is closer than we think it might be.
Yeah. And also,
because that's the only, if Turner's healthy, they've been riding him.
No, they've 100%. There's no reason to believe they're going to start Martinez over Turner at this point. No reason.
Let's see. We only have no more. Someone, BR Tiger, asked any news on Coach Lindsey. No, we do not have a health update there. We just know he left the hospital and he's been home recovering. And thoughts and prayers, obviously, with him as he goes through all that. John Jancic is coaching the D-line and Bob Diaco is coaching the Jack linebackers right now. But this looks to be the last one, and it goes to Texan Tiger. And it's kind of philosophy stuff. One, Malik Nabers, how do you get him in space over the middle instead of everything being a low percentage timing route on the sideline? And how do you get Mason Taylor in the middle of the field as a safety net instead of just dragging in across the field on the read option, which, as I noted, that's just a play they really like a lot.
Yeah. It would require them to change the style of their pass game. It would require them to have Jaden, I think, make more reads and like different levels concepts type stuff of like, progress from you know, different spots on the field. Because with Malik on the sideline and kind of having his stuff on comebacks or slants or fades or whatnot, back shoulders, goes, it's very much one read for Jaden Daniels, and that makes it easy on him. And I think that that's where they're comfortable. And like I said, against Florida State, they were always going to go back to what they were comfortable doing. And that's one-on-one stuff with Malik Nabers. And, you know, that's just what they do. That's the passing philosophy with Dembrock and Daniels. And then Mason Taylor, same thing. A lot of out routes, drags, a lot of, you know, flare type stuff coming across. That's just where they want him to get the ball. I mean, that's the same offense as last year. You can ask me why it's the same offense as last year. It's because it's the same coordinator and the same team. It's the same roster. Anybody, we see it across college football, Shay, don't we? It's like everybody expects these grand changes from coordinators. Even when you change coordinators, like if the roster is the same, there's only so much you can kind of do. We saw with Clemson, right? You have Garrett Riley now, Cade Klubnik at quarterback, and you still can't really produce offense. So it's hard. It's hard to score. It's hard to create consistent offense in college football. And I don't think LSU has a bad offense by any means right now. It's just not championship level.
Well, and I think people need to remember this too. And I don't think everyone thinks like this, obviously. And you can add little wrinkles and you can show more and you can get deeper into your playbook the more experienced you are. But Brian Kelly talked about one of the biggest advantages of this team were not just the players that came back. Look, you've got five back on the starting line. You've got your running backs back. You got your starting quarterback. You got Malik back as a starter. Brian Thomas and them have played plenty. So like you had all these veterans, but he spoke more about the continuity of offense and defensive coordinator, Matty B. And he said, because of that, like for instance, with Dinbrock, the team knows the playbook now. We're not having to teach them from scratch. They can now fine tune things. So like if you're expecting some wholesale change to the offense, that would negate.
That's the point.
Yeah. Bringing back a coordinator and having the whole team already know what they're supposed to be doing. They're in the stage where it's just quite surprising they're not executing on what should be done.
And they executed in the first half. Again,
they did. They went 5 of 6 to the red zone.
Like they went to the red zone 5 times. And they just couldn't score, which speaks to my point of, you know, not being explosive. It's hard to score in the red zone. But they were really good last year. Scored on 72% of their red zone possessions were touchdowns. Like they were really good last year. But it's hard to be consistent. And that's why I had that Jaden Daniels prop. They're going to have to run the ball well. They're going to have to use Daniels' legs and to score touchdowns in the red zone again, because it's not easy, but we'll see if they can do it.
And that's it. And we made it to the end. And nobody mentioned that Matty B starts 0-1 on his best bet. His over a half a rushing touchdown for Jaden. Oh, so close.
1 yard away.
Oh, so close.
Oh. I kept yelling, just run QB power. Just go. QB sneak it, something.
Nope. Those are the breaks.
RPOs. So.
All right, Matty B, good stuff. Let the people know where to follow us, and we'll get out of here.
Yeah. Bengal Tiger on 3 on Twitter. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. If you've made it this far in the video, subscribe it, send it to a friend, do all that stuff. We really appreciate the support. We appreciate all the replies, good or bad. Leave us a like as well. And then if you're listening on the audio side, Spotify, Apple, hope this helped you, you know, get through to a drive to work, drive home, all that stuff. Leave us a 5-star on there. That would really help us as well. So for Shay Dixon, I'm Matthew Bruni. We'll be back with the preview podcast on Friday, and we will talk to y'all then.